This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris back with Bruce Norris and Chris and Molly Silva. Thanks for coming back. And today we are talking about expired inventory. So is 90 days typically a listing agreement these days where if things don't sell within 90 days, it expires and the buyer, this potential seller moves on?
I try to go 6 months, but I know probate listings are 90 days.
Okay.
Typically.
So probate's 90, but so what did you say? 180 days?
I usually go 6 months, but things will sell quickly if they are priced correctly.
Got it. Okay. Wanted to check.
And that's a good point right there.
Yes.
You know, when something expires, it's usually got a little, especially in quadrant four where your prices are escalating and it got a good market.
Yeah.
If you have an expired listing, the property's got an overpriced or it's got some hair on it somewhere.
Yeah. You know? And that's what'll be fun about this is like, I want to talk by per quadrant. Like why do these things expire?
Well, yeah. The buyer has changed too.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's a really good point. I didn't even think about talking about that. So let's go back to quadrant one. So market turn. So we're talking about 2006 and 2007 when we've just come off just a boom. And I think it's probably pretty easy to understand why things are starting to linger because the prices are starting to drop. Builders have built too much. Prices are getting dropped by the builders and you just have a lot of... it's a really fun time to probably be working with equity sellers at that point.
Well, they still have in their mind yesterday's price.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But they also have usually a big equity position. So let me speak to this because that just happened to be when I got in the business. So it was 1980 and interest rates were starting to climb to where they were going to get to 17%. But in 1980, I didn't know a soul and they didn't have any training. And so what I did is I got an MLS book and I had expired listings. I mean, what else? And I didn't know a foreclosure list existed. I didn't know any of that stuff. So I just called people. I hammered the people that it had expired. And so are you still interested in selling? Would you consider an all cash offer? 95 out of 100 get lost. And I made the 100 phone calls and got the five. And it's a lot of work. It is. It's just a lot of work, especially when you're just, you know, you don't know anybody. You don't even know what you're saying. I didn't even know the language.
Yeah.
I mean, I really didn't. I have no clue. And so, but I did understand the very basic premise that our stuff was cooler than their stuff. I always believed that cash was better than equity. And so that was always something in my mind that I get that concept that if I can give you cash and solve whatever, or some of the deals we put together were surprisingly really cool real estate without debt on them. And I never forgot that. So $1 million house, I bought more than a couple at 650. That was our formula, 65%, from owners that understood it was worth $1 million in the best areas of Orange County. And you just kind of go, you know, I didn't interview people. I was like, why did you do that? But it must have been to their advantage. That's the only thing I can say is they had something to do with that money that was better than the equity. That's the only explanation.
You're not in their head. You just...
Yeah. And so, you know, there were times they even had, I remember there were people that had consultants. And I was, you know how you're just in that mode where you're going to be aggressive. You're not going to take no for an answer. So I had made an offer on a street called Ceron, Norris spelled backwards. How's that? 7,000 square feet. It was listed for $1,050,000. I made an offer at 650. The guy had a call center where it was all employees that were making cold calls. And he had an accountant. He ran that by. And I came in and the guy said, yeah, my accountant said it's no good. So I'll see you later. And it really bothered me that night because I remember thinking this guy looked at it seriously on his own. So there's something I'm not picking up. So I spent a while putting together a 7-page presentation and walked in the next day, which he was a kind of a hard guy anyway because of his business. He said, yeah, what are you doing here? He said, I already told you I wasn't interested. I said, well, you told me you weren't interested for all the wrong reasons. If you sit down with me for 1 minute and look at 7 pages, I'll tell you that's a good idea. And the guy did it. Okay. So that's part of this, you know, the quadrant doesn't matter as much, but this guy already had a big cash position. And so, you know, if you can find out, and the way I always used to find out was I don't want to ask you, well, what did you pay for your house? That just sounds so abrupt.
Matter.
Well, it sounds so abrupt.
Yeah.
But to me, it kind of did matter. So I'd say, gosh, I'm just curious, what did homes go for around here? And then they'll say, we paid, and fill in the blank. Okay, what if they paid $200,000 for this house?
Right.
Okay. And they say, wow, you know, what were the down payments back then? So then all of a sudden, I can translate return. I say, okay, pay $200,000 for this. It's now worth whatever. And you put down $20,000, and we're turning $20,000 even with an as-is offer into $300,000. That might work. And it gives them an excuse to say to somebody else, well, what'd you sell it for? Well, I don't want to tell you that, but I can tell you that every year I owned it, I made 25% on my money. Oh, well, now they're a hero. I remember thinking like that way early on. And so quadrant one was that little piece of area where people had tons of equity. If it was matched with opportunity or a problem, they said yes 10 times a month, and I didn't know what I was doing.
Interesting. Well, and at that time, this is an interesting question just because you happen to be in the REO business. Did you completely stop really focusing on equity sellers around that time frame?
Yes.
Of course. Yeah, it's pointless.
That's why I had such a tough recovery.
Right. This time around, it was because people were cranking money out of their properties and the prices dove so fast, the only game in town was REOs, really.
Right.
And the short sales didn't even come about till later.
A lot later.
But in the 80s, you had rise in foreclosures, but you had no price hit.
Right.
Because they just never became a big piece of the market. And so you had people with a lot of equity, but they, you know, they couldn't sell maybe. So that was...
So eventually, when we get to that point where this turn happens, a lot of people could be in you know, 09, 010 prices and have that same ability. With really low interest rates.
Yeah. I mean, they could definitely have tons of equity. It's, you know what? It all boils down to, are you willing to have a conversation with 100 people to get five maybes? Have expired listings been a participant like of very many of your properties, do you think?
No, we haven't really had to, but now we've got a team that's growing. And we're saying, here's a list. Here's a way to get a hold
of them.
Here's an opportunity. Because we there's so many opportunities. There's, you know, empty nesters.
That person's raised their hand and said, I'm an interested seller at some number. And you just never know. Okay.
Right.
I was a young guy, probably 29, when I had, when we decided to adopt Sarah.
Yeah.
And I had a property listed that I had bought from somebody. It was my first investment property. And when we decided we were going to adopt, we all of a sudden found out we had to have an extra bedroom. And all of a sudden, I'm a motivated person as a seller because I had tied up a house that was on Spruce Street that we ended up living in. But it was worth, I don't know, probably $130,000, and I had tied it up for $70,000, and it was what we needed. But I needed to churn the $70,000 out of somewhere. So it was listed by a guy, and he got an offer from an investor that was $20,000 less than it was listed for. And he was mortified. He didn't even want to tell me the offer until we had a conversation. He says, yeah, I got to tell you the offer. And he told me, and I also had my residence at the same time. So he had listed the rental, and I looked at the numbers, and I could take, yes, I could say yes to both. And so this agent that was embarrassed about getting the offer got two commissions and probably fell off his chair when I said, I'll take that offer as long as he'll buy my residence at the same number, because my circumstances had changed, you know? And so that happens. So people get lucky because they're active. They're in the position to where when those circumstances change, they're the go-to person, whether it was that day that they made the phone call or last year that they did the mailer, people keep that stuff and go,
they do,
you know?
I mean, we at a daily basis, I mean, I don't know if you've gotten any calls today. It's a Monday, and usually it's a little quieter on a Monday. But, you know, I've gotten two calls on properties already today, and I haven't been to the office, so I've got to go back. But it's one of those things, if you put yourself in that situation, you are the go-to. And they know, even McKee, they call me, Ryan, and if they're full, they'll call me. And they'll say, do you want this? You want to try to do this? Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, to get a shot at that stuff when it's nobody else's inventory at this moment. Yeah, that's
Is there a rhyme or reason? Can any of you say, like, you know, most of expired listings in this specific market, in this turnaround, I don't know, they come from a specific location? Is it divorce, death, disease, the 3 D's? Is it something else?
Overpriced.
You know, and condition is so important right now. You know, you can be priced like totally to the market where it needs to be, even for the condition, like you know, your average FHA grade home, I should call it, but it needs paint, carpet, kitchen, bathrooms, but it's in decent condition. Mm-hmm. A seller may not at that point take a, you know, a cash discounted offer, but first time buyers aren't interested anymore. A lot of them are not interested. They want, I have a name for it. It's called the HGTV syndrome. And buyers just want those nice, pretty, flashy houses right now.
Okay, still. Now, see, I think that's significant. So you're saying there was, has there been a mood shift, or has that been in place for a long time?
Well, when we were doing the REOs, everything was a beige out. Basically, that's what we did. We had no, most of the investors, I mean, paint the walls, brown carpet, everything was neutral. I mean, they now everything is so pretty and polished because of, like she said, HGTV.
Yeah.
But now the investors, most of the homes, or at least for the longest time, I think there's a little bit of a shift, but a lot of the inventory that you would see on the market were investor homes. So what do investors do? New windows, if they can, you know, new pretty this, new that, wood flooring, laminate flooring, they're nice and pretty. And then you have Joe's house down the street that he's lived in. He might have painted it 2-3 years ago, but it's still lived in and doesn't have that fresh look.
Yeah. And there's not enough buyer momentum to not ignore that house. You know, that's that. Well, that's like a quadrant one in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you're not out of quadrant four yet, but I'm saying there is a psychological change.
Yeah.
And that's when you're an investor, you really have to recognize that. Because if you're in full blown 2005, let's say, you didn't have to worry about anything. I mean, honestly, it was going to sell to somebody. If it had a front door and it was on a dirt road and was a manufactured home, you probably got an offer because it was hotter than a firecracker. When that changes, you know, you've got to be ahead of the curve because you don't want to get stuck with the stuff, you know, that's going to not be the obvious inventory to buy.
As a real estate investor, when it comes to quadrant one, you know, as you're sort of turning the corner and it's coming down just a little bit, do you write an offer through a realtor or just direct?
Well, if I'm going to call the people directly, I'm probably going to try to make an offer directly. If I'm calling about an REO, I want to cycle that offer back around because the relationship is more important than the property.
Okay.
I want to be the agent. I want to call the agent and say, I've got a lender that's interested in a listing you used to have, and I want to write the offer through you. Well, that's not done. But that's smart because then you're capturing the relationship and that's more important than the property.
Wait, let me make sure I caught that. Did you say the Silver Group had listed the REO and it expired?
Right.
You would go back to the Silver Group and ask for them to write the offer?
Yes. If I call the lender directly and they're interested,
okay,
I am going to do that. I'm going to go back.
That's nice.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, how do you now most agents are smart enough not to put the homeowners even on a regular listing that expired. Overpriced. I'm smart enough not to put the homeowner's number in the MLS before it expires. I take that out. But if you do go back to that agent, if you're an investor like I am, I want to buy that house, I'm going to go back to that agent and say, hey, will you contact that homeowner or give me the number? I'll write an offer, no commissions, and I'll give you a 20% referral fee of what your commission would have been.
Okay.
So, you know, it's the relationship base.
One of the listings that expired for me was 5 new homes in Colton. So in 1980, I don't know zip, but there's 5 new homes that were listed for $225,000 that I called the owner directly on. And I made an offer, a blind offer, basically, and he took it. And it was $125,000. So, I mean, part of what you find out is you just find out by trying and asking. So that was one of those cases where there was a huge discount available, but no one knew it.
But you also asked where are these coming from? There are still in this day and age agents that will do anything to get a listing, and they will say your property is worth 50% more, 100% more than what it's worth just to get the listing. Then they grind them down on price if they can.
Wow.
Those expire all the time.
Yeah.
So
that's a lot of expired.
The HGTV effect hasn't wised up the buyers, the sellers to that nonsense, huh?
No, that's television. Everybody makes money on TV.
Right. Oh my gosh. So expired listings in a bust market. It's probably mostly REO and it just wasn't priced right. And for some reason you couldn't beat up the lender. Was that fair enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, but in a bus market, that's not even one of the strategies we would use.
No, I know. Okay. I definitely want to just bring that up. One of the questions I want to have answered is just, you know, why would you have an expired listing in that market?
Well, and what I've just said, though, is kind of important for not wasting time. So let's say I ran an ad in the Riverside Press, and it turned from 1989 to 1990. My calls doubled, and all of a sudden I was a therapist. Mm-hmm. Nothing was selling. Everyone was upside down. And I went home and was like, oh my God, I don't want anybody to call anymore. You know, that's why I had to figure out, well, where did the deals go? And oh yeah, they were hiding in the auction company, or they were REOs in the MLS. And that's, you know, I had to change my strategy and stop doing what wasn't working, because it can take an enormous amount of time. And then, you know, you don't have time to do what actually makes sense.
All right. Okay. Well, quadrant three is recovery mode, the short, sort of a short phase. So more short sales are going on still, but expired listings, why at the bottom of a market as you're going to more short sales, is this just still a pricing issue? Just people not, I mean, they've already gotten beat up pretty bad. Like, yeah. You know, when you're at the bottom in 2011 and you're at 2012, I guess it still happens a little bit, but.
I would think that would be equity based, you know, sellers that let's try this. And if it doesn't work, we're not going to sell.
Right.
You know, there's an equity position there, I would assume.
For those who had it.
Yeah. Or some wishful thinking, you know, hey, let's try.
You could also have the lenders still asking something they're not going to get. And they'll have that moment where they decide to be realistic. You know, unfortunately, that usually happens with the next listing agent. I mean, honestly, that I can't tell you how many times I've had an offer where all of a sudden it went pending and it was for less than my offer was.
Yeah.
You're kind of going, what the heck?
What monkey business happened there too?
So as you switch gears, I mean, putting your REO hat on to the short sales in around 2012, what was the seller then, the equity seller? Were they licking their wounds or were they just excited to get out? What was the feeling?
They were happy to get out at that point.
Okay.
They were just ecstatic. I had somebody tell me the other day, somebody that listed a house across the street from my house, she has a drastically overpriced. I said, oh, I bought mine 2005. She says, what'd you pay? And I told her it was about 630,000. She says, well, what's it worth today? And I said, about 550. Oh, I'm so sorry. I go, oh no, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm fine with it.
Yeah,
now,
we're so over the 600. I'm like, we're glad it's not 250.
I never thought I'd see it where it's at right now.
Yeah, so, yeah, a lot of the houses in our neighborhood, it was a KB home, track built in, let's see, I think it finished in 07, so right at the wrong time. Man, people were buying those for 500 grand. There's very few of them left, but the people who hung on and did not do a short sale foreclosure are just starting to sell, and they're still not making their money back. Still, yeah, not quite there. Both neighbors sold.
But they hung in there.
They did, which is, you know, something to say. That's pretty incredible.
They didn't use their house as an ATM machine. And
The one thing about calling expired listings, it's great practice. No, seriously.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, it's great practice. It's free.
Yeah, that's true.
And it works because you're talking to somebody that's raised hand. It's no different than a mailer with 100 responses, to be honest with you. So what? 95 people are not even going to consider talking to you. That's not the ones you're after. When I used to get really chewed out, I mean, by somebody, I'd say, I really appreciate your response, because I've noticed that I have to go through one of these to get to one that they'll say yes. So I'm glad that you're done and I'm going to go buy a house, you know, because somebody's going, what's your lawyer's name?
They're going to be a lot more responsive than you get a thousand phone numbers and calling in random people versus they've already wanted their house to sell once. So.
That's right.
It's going to be a lot more.
Yeah, but it depends on when you're going to call them. If you call them that day or that week it expires, then that's going to be tough.
Pre-foreclosures was a term. Do they have like a pre-expired listing list or something? So you get there before that happens?
If you're not licensed, you can do whatever you want. No. You can start calling and all that stuff.
Oh, that's an ethical thing, right?
Yeah, with us. Because we're a licensed agent. Yep. So we can't call. We can't mail stuff out until it expires. Then it's open.
Then it's fair game.
Our corporation can, though.
Really? Yeah. Well, what if you just, hey, we recently sold this in your neighborhood. If you've got friends who want to buy, that's fine.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, it just depends how aggressive and what you're doing and what you're looking for.
Fair enough. I get a lot of those postcards whenever something sells in the neighborhood that's real popular. They sort of blanket. Okay. So now here we are in 04 and, beyond, we're in quadrant four. What's some good excuses for expired listing these days? So we've talked about the HDT effect. It's just not quite perfect and it's not quite to the point where you plant a flower in the front and you get $50,000 more. So that means we still have some ways to go, right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, again, what would be wrong with pairing with a realtor?
Right.
And diving into this. And so you'll make as many calls as you can stand in a day, but you have some good conversations where even if you don't put the listing together, you have maybe a referral that will stick. You know, don't ignore that stuff, because the gentleman that came in the boot camp and made those cold calls, mm-hmm. okay, this was one of his methods.
Yeah.
And it worked. He's bought a lot of properties at pretty good size discounts because no one else was doing it. That's no one is doing that from our world.
Before the interview, you had talked about new agents. So you have the opportunity to train them. Are you training them to be investor friendly or?
Yes. Yeah. And getting them to be investor friendly has been a little difficult.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's more methodical. It's not your open house weekend. Let's find a buyer and show them property at your leisure or the buyer's leisure. It is methodical. It is getting on the phones. It's doing mailers. It's going
out systems.
Exactly. Putting those systems in place and, you know, learning the market, learning the area, learning, just diving into the world of...
It's actually easier than being a regular real estate agent.
It is. We,
they listen to us, they can make money. Once we had a few agents listen to us and follow our systems and do this, of course, with a little grit and determination on their end, all of a sudden, oh, wow, I can make money at this. See? So our goal is to get more people like that, so it's even easier on us.
Hmm. So, and we have a great team.
Got to be a general and you have your troops.
Yeah.
What's been the feeling in the market? Are there a lot of realtors coming into the space now?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, we've changed a lot. We just opened our own, boutique brokerage, and it's all about, the vibe, the culture, because the millennials are the new...
Right.
They're the market now, mm-hmm. So we have to change as they change. And there's a lot of younger agents. There's a lot of young agents coming and they're changing everything up.
And they're not spoiled.
And I'm old now.
No, not spoiled at all.
Yeah.
They don't know any better, right?
They don't.
Oh, well, that's good.
But they're hard workers.
What's interesting,
a lot of them are hard workers.
They're used to responding the way the clients expect to get
right
responded.
Now.
Yeah, right now. And via mm-hmm. this, not calling maybe or being in person, which is interesting. Because if you're an agent that's, been around for, say, 30 years, you're thinking some, contacting people tomorrow is okay, and all of a sudden you go.
That's not how
it is.
It is
so hard now. I mean, we're looking at systems all the time, and it's expensive, but that's just what we have to do to stay on top of it. Now, because we're owners now, and we're fairly young owners compared to a lot of brokerages here in town. I mean, there's some younger ones, in the Inland Empire, but you see the younger ones that are going strong, they're hip, they're getting everything done, they're getting systems, where the older ones are just kind of petering.
Hmm.
So,
well, last question before we have to end this segment, technology, does it help with expired listings because the seller's coming a little bit more knowledgeable? So you've got Zillow telling them what their property is worth, maybe is it a little beat them up a little bit sooner? Are they more realistic?
Well, first off, let me tell you, with our background and doing the REOs, mm-hmm. we had to do thousands and thousands of BPOs. And we are basically like appraisers. I mean, and we know how to adjust and all that stuff. So, and I have a Fannie Mae appraisal form. I can fill that thing out with the adjustments. And I can go in there and show them true value and blow any other agent away that doesn't have the background that we have, that mm-hmm. doesn't have an REO background.
Okay.
And explain to them value. But yes, there are other systems, because Molly takes care. As far as my role in our whole thing here is I'm more of the investor. I'm out in the field. I'm looking at the properties. I'm getting my hands dirty. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that. Molly's the back end, the office, the phone calls.
The people person.
Voice. Yeah, the voice, the people person. So.
Okay. Well, with that, that's the end of this segment. So thank you so much for being here. And one more time, if they want to get a hold of you, how would you like to do that?
My phone number is 951-313-7369. And it's Modern Dwelling Silva Group. And our website is www.silvagrp.com.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.